Welcome to The Bridge, a weekly magazine show featuring local and regional stories. I'm Kathleen Morgane, your host for the show. Can a test measure critical thinking? Schools hope to find out as a new standardized test reveals how schools stack up to other states and track year-to-year student growth from grade 3 on. That story coming up in about 5 minutes. Also on the show, free skier and Northwest Olympian Anjali Van Lennon suffered from undiagnosed Lyme disease for over 14 years. Now she's using her increased visibility to drive home the message that the sooner the bacterial disease is detected, the easier it is to treat.
I'm really grateful to have the chance to share my story on a platform like the Olympics because I can reach so many more people and spread the word about Lyme awareness and touch more lives.
Tom Bonsi shares Van Lennon's story coming up at 8:22. NPR News headlines are next. The time is 9:01. You're listening to The Bridge on Coast Community Radio. I'm Kathleen Morgane. Northwest parents of school-aged children have a new acronym to learn, the SBAC or SBAC. That's the new standardized test that's set to replace current state math and language arts tests in Oregon, Washington, and Idaho. It's billed as the next generation of assessment, a test that hopes to capture students' abilities with more depth than traditional standardized tests. But as Jessica Robinson reports, some critics say the new test runs into the same old problems.
The SBAC stands for the Smarter Balanced Assessment Consortium, a group of 24 states. And last year, hundreds of schools, including many in the Northwest, got their first taste of what the new test is like. Seventh graders at Lakes Magnet Middle School in Coeur d'Alene, Idaho, filed into the computer lab in the school's library for the test.
This whole thing was full. In fact, I think we even had computers on this side. It was a big room. There's a lot of clicking going on.
Ryan Gillespie is a math coach for the district. And this new test, Gillespie said, had been talked about for years.
I mean, it was almost becoming lore. This new test was going to be super, very difficult. And we were just excited to see if the myths were true.
Now, the pilot didn't go off without a hitch. The online test was sluggish at times. The dragging and highlighting functions didn't work so well. But Gillespie says the questions themselves were noticeably different. Here's an example. In the past, students might be given an equation.
You know, 3x plus 1 equals 9.
And asked to solve for x.
And the kids go, okay, do a minus 1 here and a minus 1 there.
Divide both sides by 3 and x equals 2 and 2 thirds. Are you following this?
So it's an if I do this, then I do this, then I circle my answer, and I'm done.
But he says the student might not understand what that 2 and 2 thirds means or why it's x. On the SBAC, Gillespie says kids might still have to solve for x, but they were also asked questions like this.
Here's the equation, 3x plus 1 equals 9. And here's 5 different real-world scenarios. Which of these 5 scenarios could be modeled using this equation? So kids have to understand that mathematical sentence, that language, understand conceptually what it means. And it was something we've never been evaluated on.
The SBAC is designed to accomplish something that parents and teachers have long sought, an assessment aimed at measuring critical thinking. The test includes multiple choice questions, but also more complex performance tasks, where students have to take in information and give a long-form answer. Schools will be able to see how they stack up to other states and track year-to-year student growth from grade 3 on. Mike Nelson is the director of curriculum and assessment for the Coeur d'Alene School District. He says parents may see proficiency levels go down at first because students are being asked to clear a higher bar.
In my history as an assessment guy, this is a much different test than what we've seen before. And it's a better test. We want kids, yes, that have requisite knowledge, but we want them to be able to apply and use this information for their betterment.
The test is tied to the new, more rigorous Common Core standards in math, reading, and writing that most states have adopted. Those standards have proven contentious among some parents and politicians. But among educators, it's not the standards, it's the tests that are more controversial. At a recent hearing in the Idaho legislature, Bruce Cook, a curriculum director from Rexburg, Idaho, said kids as young as 8 and 9 may not have the computer skills to take the SBAC.
We have had to put money and time into keyboarding. We didn't have a keyboarding program for 3rd and 4th graders. I don't know that most schools did, but we surely didn't.
One poll found only 27% of teachers in Idaho support the SBAC. Some schools say the test is just too hard. and too long. The SBAC isn't timed, but it's expected to range from 6 hours in total for elementary schoolers up to 7.5 hours for older students. Kansas dropped out of the Smarter Balance Consortium late last year to create its own test. Alaska plans to follow, and there are rumblings about doing the same in Idaho. Education researcher Amy Roth McDuffie says the biggest problem isn't about the SBAC itself or any test aligned to the Common Core standards. It's how much value teachers, districts, and even the state put on the test. McDuffie teaches at Washington State University. Last year, she co-authored a report based on surveys of middle school math teachers. It found most teachers plan to use the test as a guide for classroom instruction, in part because the test weighs so heavily on teachers' own evaluations.
My concerns then are if the focus so much from teachers is on seeing the test, and it's understandable that they take that stance, then are we really aiming to teach to the Common Core, or are we teaching to a test and what can easily be tested?
McDuffie worries the Common Core standards states have crafted so carefully could ultimately be less important than a single test. But Ryan Gillespie, the math instructor in Coeur d'Alene, has a different view of it. He says teaching to this test, if that's what happens, wouldn't necessarily be a bad thing.
Math has always been something that's much more dynamic to me than just memorizing procedures. And so when I was watching this test and I was seeing what kids were having to do, to me I was thrilled because it was the questions were requiring kids to use the skills that why I got into math in the first place.
This spring, teachers and students across the Northwest will get to experience the full test for the first time. Schools are running a field test of the SBAC, a kind of test of the test. And for this year only, the results won't count. I'm Jessica Robinson reporting.
Next up, test results won't go on your permanent record, but a new class from Clatsop Community College's Seaside Campus promises to reduce anxiety when it comes to simple home repairs. There's always a first time to unclog a sink or repair a hole in the wall. Darren Dunn and Mary Freiling from Clatsop Community College join us now to talk about this six-hour class. Mary, this is just one of many practical knowledge classes the college offers. Tell us about getting it on this winter's schedule.
Well, we do a variety of classes in Seaside, but what we're looking at is developing not only workforce training, but also personal enrichment classes. And this particular class kind of falls under that area because it's the kind of skills that people want to learn, always want to know how to do this, how to do it safely, been curious about, you know, how do I use that drill? And so, fortunately, I met Darren, and he impressed me as somebody who could do a good job teaching this class. So that's how this class came about.
I can use a drill.
Well, that's good to know. This is Darren Dunn. He's going to be the instructor of this class. And Darren, how did you get into woodworking?
Well, actually, I grew up into it. My mother's side of the family, my grandfather was a master craftsman and carpenter. And most of his sons were, and my brother spent a lot of time with them, so he became, and somehow I guess it's in the blood. So as a young child, I started to investigate with the house we lived in at the time, and because I was curious about it, and I guess I just had a desire to do those kind of things from a young age.
And this class on Saturday, what kind of things will you be covering?
We're going to cover basic home repair and maintenance, all the things that most homeowners want to do themselves without hiring a contractor, especially today with our economy and the downturn and so forth, and less people are buying homes and they want to repair their home they live in. So more and more people want to take it on themselves, and it's important that they're educated on how to do it correctly because it can become a disaster. They have shows on HGTV that cover that very thing.
What would you say are the top three misuse of tools?
Oh, my goodness. I'd say most people have trouble handling a hammer or a handsaw or some of the modern power tools. A lot of people are afraid of them, power tools especially, because they can hurt you rather quickly if you don't use them correctly.
What tools will be available at Saturday's class?
All your basic hand tools, screwdrivers, hammers, hand saws, and then all your basic power tools like a miter saw, chop saw, electric chop saw, cordless drills, and so forth like that. All your standard things that most homeowners can get their hands on or are comfortable using. Nothing too heavy.
Basic hand tools, how to use a hammer, how to use a hand screwdriver, mm-hmm. how to use a power screwdriver, yep. and typical repair jobs would be?
Let's say unclogging your kitchen sink or how to plunge a toilet correctly. There are several different types of plungers out there. How to, let's say, change an outlet, change a light switch safely. Most people think you have to hire an electrician, but as a homeowner, you're free to do many things on your own. But it's smart to educate yourself first rather than to jumping into that. And then, you know, like a drywall patch, how to hang a curtain rod straight or hang a picture, things of that nature.
So these are basic tools that you can use as a homeowner or it sounds like as a renter.
Yes, exactly. Of course, if you're a renter, you better get permission first.
So what basic tools do you think people should have in their toolkit?
Both. All types of screwdrivers. Nowadays, there's a different fastener out there. It's called a Torx, which is like everybody calls it a star. That's an important tool to have. It's with a lot of the newer equipment, appliances, and all this kind of stuff that you get in your house, most of the fasteners are those type of fasteners. And if you have one simple little thing you want to do, even just changing a cord on a dryer or on a range, because it's something a homeowner can do very easily, you have to have a special tool most of the time, which is a Torx, to do that. A lot of people don't even know about it.
And then getting back to tools that people do know about, you earlier said that the hammer is the most probably maybe misunderstood tool.
Yeah, it's very troublesome for a lot of people. If you're not used to swinging a hammer, it can be very difficult and you can injure yourself and damage the surface in which you're working with. A hammer is, it seems like an easy tool, but if you've never swung a hammer before, it can be difficult and it can be frustrating.
Do you have to bring your own tools to this?
Me personally?
No, a student.
Oh, no. I'm going to have a full array of tools laid out for them to get their hands on, and we're going to discuss each one, and proper use and so forth. And I'm going to bring some safety equipment because they need to be aware of that as well.
And do you have a worksheet or a textbook that you'll be handing out at the class?
What I'm going to do is hand out. I'm just going to have handouts or an agenda, a class agenda, and a little bit of information about some of the organizations they need to be familiar with. Let's say if they want to dispose of paints and so forth, EPA requirements, things like that. Just a few little handouts for each student to take with them if they desire to.
So even basic home repair skills are more complicated than they used to
be. Yes, actually, you don't really think about it. But nowadays, with all the regulations and so forth, and it's not like you can just take chemicals and just go throw them in your trash or spill them out in your yard, whichever. And there are certain places that take these things in certain times of the year.
When you encounter people who are unfamiliar with power tools, how do you get them to overcome your fear of
power
tools?
Well, there was a fear. I had that fear. Everybody does, and everybody who works around power tools, if they don't have that fear, something's wrong, because you should be fearful of that tool, especially a power tool, at all times, because it's respect. And if you lose that, that's when things tend to happen. But it's just it's a matter of breaking the ice with them, getting them comfortable. You know, even a joke sometimes just breaks the ice and loosens them up a little bit. So, and a lot of my clients actually are like a student because they don't know these things. And as I work for people, I try to educate them and teach them. You know, not so that they can do it themselves and take my work away from me, but if they learn something and they can do it themselves, I say more power to them. You know, I'm about people saving money as well. But it is about getting them comfortable with the tool so they feel confident. And confidence is key when you're dealing with power tools. Because without confidence, you know, things can happen. And you don't get the outcome you desired.
The class goes over 2 weekends, mm-hmm. a total investment of 6 hours. So yes. You're taking 2 mornings. Yes. You'll learn a lot. Then you're coming out of this. Presumably, you'll know what you can do
yes. And
what it will be best to have somebody else do.
Exactly. You know, one of the things I'm going to tell them or teach them or enlighten them, whichever, is when the time is to call a contractor. And if you are just uncomfortable, if no matter when you've dealt with this tool or this situation, whatever, and if you're just feeling uncomfortable throughout the whole process, that's a sign to you. That's your instinct saying, you shouldn't do it. Then it's really time to call in a professional.
Well, it sounds like, Darren, you're going to be reducing people's uncomfortableness.
I hope so. That's my goal.
Increasing their comfort level.
Yeah, and their confidence, yes.
So, Mary, could you give us the details of the class and how to register?
Yes. You can register online at www.clatsupcc.edu. /schedule and search under course title any part of the course, and that will pull the course up. It is this Saturday, so our time is limited for this two-part class. So you might be better served to call either my office at 503-338-2408 or the South County office in Seaside at 503-338-2402. The cost of this class is only $35, and I think it's well worth it. Darren is a lot of fun to work with, and I'm looking forward to his class.
I'm passing flyers out there. I'm actually hanging flyers all over Seaside. So if you forget the information that was just given you, just look for a flyer at the community center, the Chamber of Commerce, the library, those type of places. I'm going to have flyers posted up.
And Mary?
I think Darren said it all.
Well, this is going to be fun. And come ready to learn and to have fun.
Thank you very much, you two, for coming in.
Thank you. God bless you.
You're listening to The Bridge here on Coast Community Radio, 91.9 KMUN Astoria and 89.5 KTCB Tillamook. Still ahead, how a Northwest Olympic athlete overcame a battle with Lyme disease. She's using the publicity she gets now to help prevent others from going through an experience like hers. We'll hear more coming up just after this weather break. Here's the National Weather Service forecast for the Lower Columbia Coastal Region. Mostly cloudy today. A chance of showers this morning, then more showers this afternoon. Highs around 45 with west winds 10 to 20 miles per hour. The chance of precipitation 80% with rainfall amounts around a quarter of an inch. Nomination to the U.S. Olympic team completes a remarkable comeback for a pro skier from Bellingham, Washington. Anjalee Van Lennen overcame Lyme disease and a three-year hiatus for treatment to punch her ticket in ski halfpipe. Lyme disease is quite uncommon in the Pacific Northwest. That may be why Van Lennen's strength-sapping symptoms went misdiagnosed for more than a decade. Correspondent Tom Bonsi has her story.
There she is in a brand new Team USA parka. Anjalee Van Lennen beams, waves as a master of ceremonies pumps up the crowd in Park City, Utah. She and her teammates are the picture of good health.
Let's send them off to Sochi in style. One more time, I ask you to make some noise for the first ever U.S. Olympic freeskiing team!
Moments earlier, the final Olympic trial event wrapped up. The 28-year-old Bellingham native secured a spot in the Sochi Games with a clutch performance in her last chance to qualify.
The power
and hangs on,
puts it together. Oh yeah,
that
now
was the.
That is a pipe run, Anjalee.
Van Lennen only returned to competitive skiing at the beginning of last season. In Sochi, she'll celebrate a recovery milestone.
February 10th will be the two-year anniversary of being diagnosed in remission. So it's very exciting to hit that mark. I feel very confident in my health.
Just a few days afterwards, Van Lennen drops into the Olympic halfpipe with what she hopes will be a medal-winning routine of high-flying tricks, spins, and grabs. Van Lennen battled Lyme disease throughout her teenage years to her mid-20s. Today, she can trace the infection to a tick that bit her in Wisconsin at the age of 10. But it took a very long time to figure out what was wrong.
I stumped doctors, and because my symptoms fluctuated so much over the years, I was not correctly diagnosed for 14 years.
Van Lennen suspects that lack of education and awareness of Lyme disease led to her misdiagnosis for so many years. So last year, she co-produced a documentary about her illness. In it, her family and fellow freeskiers like Jen Hudak recall their puzzlement with Van Lennen's bouts of fatigue, lack of balance, and emotional swings.
I remember seeing her sometimes in the air, and I'm like, it just looks like she doesn't know where she is. She's just falling out of the sky. And well, that's the case. Like, you know, vertigo would set in the middle of a run, and she would literally just fall out of the sky.
Lyme disease is far more prevalent in the upper Midwest and Northeast than here. Idaho reports just a handful of confirmed cases annually. Oregon and Washington average maybe around a dozen per year. Washington State Department of Health epidemiologist Marcia Goldoff says a distinctive bullseye rash is a telltale sign you were bitten by an infected tick, but not all patients get it or notice it.
And after that, the symptoms are fatigue, headache, fever, muscle and joint aches. It can sound like flu. It can sound like dozens and dozens of conditions and can be very hard to detect.
Goldoff says most cases confirmed among Northwest residents were acquired elsewhere. She says about one person in a million gets Lyme disease from our native western ticks. They're scattered out there in a variety of different habitats where deer and mice are present.
There are some hot spots that are recognized locally. Check yourself after hiking. Remove the ticks and check particularly at places where the fabric may rub at the waistband or at the knees if the ticks may be there. Also check your pets.
Free skier Anjali Van Lannen says the sooner you catch the bacterial disease, the easier it is to treat. She says she's extremely excited to arrive on the world's biggest stage to talk about these things she cares about.
I'm really grateful to have the chance to share my story on a platform like the Olympics, because I can reach so many more people and spread the word about Lyme awareness and touch more lives.
The half-hour online documentary in which Van Lannen stars is called Limelight. That's L-Y-M-E light. The film's director says daily web hits have increased by the hundreds since the Mount Baker ski area phenom made the Olympic team. Van Lannen's return to peak form conveniently coincides with the debut of her event, Ski Halfpipe, in the Winter Games. I'm Tom Bonsi reporting.
Finally, for those who are not rabid Super Bowl fans, the Assistance League of the Columbia Pacific has an alternate Sunday activity for you. It's called Accessorize with Assistance League, and Mary Davies, ALCP president, promises it will be a lot of fun.
Good morning, Mary. First, tell us about the Assistance League of the Columbia Pacific and about the children it benefits.
Okay, the Assistance League, we are a nonprofit, all-volunteer organization, and we have about 104 members right now that are from all the way from Cannon Beach up through Astoria and Napa, and mostly women, but men can belong to the Assistance League. And we have four programs that benefit children in Clatsop County, and our main focus is clothing children. We have Operation School Bell, and that we purchase clothing for children in need, and from kindergarten all the way through high school. And this last fall, we clothed approximately 415 children in Clatsop County, all the way even in Jewell.
So this Clatsop County event benefits children in Clatsop County.
Yes, and all the clothing that we purchase here in Clatsop County too. So the money we raise here and we spend it here. We shop locally. Also.
So now the Accessorize with Assistance League event.
It's kind of hard to say. It's a lot of words. We came up with Accessorize, not exercise. Yes, it's this Sunday, Super Bowl Sunday, February 2nd, from noon until 4 at the Holiday Inn Express here in Astoria.
And what will people experience at the event?
Okay, and there's no fee. There's no charge to get in or anything. And when you walk in, you will be amazed because we will have over 4,000 items that we have collected from the area. And actually, I got a box from my sister from Washington, D.C. yesterday with a Dooney and Borg purse in it and jewelry. We have bags, many, many handbags and scarves, jewelry, so much jewelry this year, hats, sunglasses, belts, any kinds of accessories. And they're all, sorry, men, but they're all women's accessories. You can come if you'd like. But and then we'll have some wine and some cupcakes donated by Simply Cupcakes and Simply J Cupcakes, and cookies and some nuts and things, you know, to nibble on. And we'll have a table there also. If you're interested in the Assistance League and would like to join, you can find out all about what we do and what we're about. And this is going to be it's a really fun event.
It sounds like a lot of fun. And thanks for coming on the show today to tell us about it.
Thank you for having me.
That's all the time we have for today's show. The Bridge airs weekly, Thursday mornings at 9. If you join the show late, you can listen to a podcast of the show from our website at coastradio.org. Just click the program box on the homepage. We welcome your comments on the show. Call us at 503 503- 425-0010 or email to news1, that's NEWS, then the numeral 1, at KMUN.org. I'm Kathleen Morgane saying thank you for listening today, and listen in again next Thursday for the next edition of The Bridge. The Bridge is a production of Coast Community Radio.